Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning call and talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for David Inge. Glad to have this opportunity to talk with you and glad to have you listening. During this first hour of the show, actually during both hours, we'll be talking about computers. But during the first hour, we will be talking about a very fun thing coming up on the campus of the University of Illinois, the first annual, perhaps, Computer Fear Film Festival. This will be taking place at Fullinger Auditorium on Saturday, September 9th. It is a celebration of all that is corny, perhaps, or sublime, or some combination thereof in the film world involving computers. We'll talk about the Computer Fear Film Festival, and we'll try to say that correctly next time. And we'll talk with two of the originators of the festival, Marcia Woodbury, who is a lecturer in the Department of Computer Science at the University of Illinois here in Champaign-Urbana. Also, Christine Catanzarite. She's Associate Director for the Illinois Program for Research in the Humanities and also a former film instructor, professor, and creator of other film series. We'll talk with them and take your questions. If you have favorite film experiences involving computers or something that you'd like to talk about in that genre, you can call us around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. Well, to both of you, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Our pleasure.
Okay. Well, let me ask you to start by talking about how this came about. Obviously, there's this Insect Fear Film Festival, which is a big, you know, annual event on campus, and go ahead.
Well, it all started with the Insect Fear Festival.
Sure.
It was a terrific event. If you haven't been, you should go. We got the inspiration from the way they, or Mae Birnbaum, actually, who's on your program quite a bit.
Sure.
She is a very enthusiastic person and will get up and introduce corny old movies about insects and tell the audience exactly what is wrong with the movies and then talk a little bit about maybe some of our irrational fears of the insects. And with my involvement in computer ethics and social impact of computers, it was just a natural to make the leap to computer fear. So I put out a call to find out if anyone else was interested, and sure enough, lots of people are interested and fascinated.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going. We're on our way.
That's great. Is this going to be an annual event?
Yes, it'll be an annual event. We have actually quite a lot planned, much more than the Insect Fear Festival, as it turns out, and I think it could get bigger. The minute I put out the list of movies, I started getting email with, why didn't you add this movie?
Right.
You know?
Right.
But let me explain a little. What we're going to
sure.
do is we're having some panels on Friday morning at the Illini Union. One of them, we're showing a film you may not have heard of. It's called Minerva's Machine, and it was made by the ACM, the Association of Computing Machinery, about women in computer science. And it's an hour. It's a little hard to take in some ways because it's very realistic about what happens to women in computer science, and some of it is kind of rough, and some of it's inspiring. And you really learn how to survive in this world. It's a men's world. And then the second panel is on computer fear. And Christine has kindly consented to be on that with Cal Alston.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be excellent. And then the next activities all begin on Saturday night with the festival itself. One of the things, I know we have the titles of the movies here, but we're also going to have some demonstrations from the students out front. We're going to have, in between the movies, we have student-produced computer graphics. So that should be fun, too.
Uh-huh.
Also, there's a parody of the Blair Witch Project, too.
Oh, really?
Yes.
On film?
On film. The computer science students did it. And that will be fun.
And that's all. Is it Friday, you said?
The Friday morning are the panels in the Illini Union,
yeah.
And they're open to the public. And then Saturday night from 6:30 on, the movies start at 7 and go right through till probably 2 in the morning.
Oh, okay. Very interesting. There is, by the way, a website for people if you want to get all the information about the festival. Should we mention that?
Oh,
I've
yes.
got it right here if you want.
Sure. It's the triple W as
right.
usual, .acm.uiuc.edu/CF3, and that's for Computer Fear Film Festival, /films You don't have to put anything after CF3. It'll
right.
just come up. Yeah.
Good. Okay, Christine, yes. What's... didn't mean to startle you.
Oh, gosh, no.
Okay, wake up. Oh. So you've been doing work in films for a long time.
Yes, I taught film for 5 years at Illinois State University before I came here in 97. I've been involved in films since I was in college. I ran film series at the University of Pittsburgh. Have a film series that's going to be running on campus this semester as well and next, but the titles for this semester have already been announced, and that ties in not with computers but with the Illinois Program for Research in the Humanities annual theme for the year, which is cities. The film series itself is called On the Town, the City in Film, and begins next Wednesday with L.A. Story, because you have to start with Steve Martin.
Right.
And continues on every third Wednesday throughout the semester.
Roger and Me is September 27th. Great film.
I love Roger and Me. I think it's wonderful, and happy to show it, regardless of the theme. Not only because of the theme, but regardless of the theme.
Yeah.
I'm happy to always sit down and watch that one.
Uh-huh. And then one that actually I was thinking about in terms of the Computer Film Festival, even though it doesn't involve computers, Metropolis, the classic by Fritz Lang. Just an outstanding. I happened to see it again recently.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful. And I'm delighted. I was torn between Metropolis and Blade Runner as the futuristic city choice for that series. So when Marcia contacted me and said, we'll be showing Blade Runner, the dilemma was resolved. And I was able to go on knowing that I hadn't duplicated something that was being done. And anybody who wanted to see Blade Runner, has probably already seen it and owns it on DVD and watches it every Wednesday night. But also would then be able to see another version of a futuristic city. So
good. I suspect a lot of people have not seen Metropolis too.
It's required by law if you take a film class. If you've not taken an introduction to film class, you may not have. It's not the sort of thing that pops up at the multiplex. It is silent. It is a German film. It is black and white. Although there was an evil colorized version that came out in the mid '80s with the disco score by Adam Ant and Queen. And Giorgio Moroder. That's not the version we'll be showing, obviously. We're going with the purest version.
Yeah, there are a bunch of versions out there, aren't there? There's a heavy metal soundtrack also. Metropolis, for people who haven't seen it, it's a 1926 film by Fritz Lang. It's a silent film. It's black and white. It's got some of the most stunning visual effects of any film, and, you know, period, but especially for 1926.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's amazing to look at now. It does not look like an old movie. People aren't driving around in old cars because it's set in a futuristic world. It's not something that we could tie to looking like the 20s. I think it still remains contemporary and interesting today.
Right. Well, before I confuse people, this is a different series we're talking about, but let's return to the Computer Film Fear Film Festival. I will eventually say that right. And tell us about the movies that are a part of that, if you would, Marcia.
Well, I'll read them out.
Sure.
But, Christine has come along as the expert.
Okay.
The movies, actually, this is a little bit of history, but I'll read the titles first and tell you why they were chosen. The three movies are Bicentennial Man, which is a parental guidance rating. That's at 7 o'clock on Saturday night, the 9th of September. That's free to the public. Bring your kids. It's Robin Williams and very accessible to children. Then a little bit rougher at 9:30 p.m. I mean, it's got an R rating when I say rougher. Mm-hmm. R for rough. The Terminator with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then finally at 11:30 p.m. Is Blade Runner, the classic. As Christine said, so many people have even own it, already know so much about it.
Yeah.
The common theme is artificial life. And we were, I think, in the insect fear, they often pick an insect for the year, like ants or bees or something. And we were looking for a theme. And there are so many interesting movies right now that are based on computers or feature computers. But the idea of artificial life is so intriguing. And I'll say one thing about this list, which is kind of amusing to me. There are two groups that are basically sponsoring this event, the Women in Computer Science group and the Association of Computing Machinery, or ACM. But you'll notice these are very male movies. They have male actors. Mm-hmm. And I asked them about that. And I think they were more interested in the theme than in being politically correct. Mm-hmm. And they all stuck with what they thought covered the topic.
Very interesting. Well, they're interesting choices. And, of course, there's a lot of different directions that you could take the festival thematically. There have been a number of films where computers are sort of in many ways the evil force.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, yes. You know, for example, 2001: A Space Odyssey, although HAL isn't evil, it's out of control. It's an example of technology. We created this technology and it gets completely out of our hands. Is that... You know, it sort of seems to me that that's one reason people fear computers, and there is so much dramatic potential for computers in our storylines and so forth.
Absolutely. I agree with that. From things that deal with political global crises like war games, where a kid who wants to play a game with a computer starts to precipitate a massive global thermonuclear war, or Failsafe, where things go so awry that eventually the only solution is to prove that it was just an accident, to prove it was just a computer error, will annihilate a whole other continent as well. Just to even the score, so massive human loss on a real destructive level, or even something like Die Hard 2, where we're not dealing with just your average terrorist dragging a bomb on a plane in their suitcase. We have a bunch of techno-savvy terrorists who hack into the computers in the control room and recalibrate ground level, so planes crash when they try to land because they think that ground level is 200 feet higher than it actually is. So that creates a level of trouble, but it's also the sense, I think we've just all been through this, the feeling that perhaps we've given ourselves over to it too much, that what seemed to be something that was so useful to us has now become a part of our lives in a way that we can't extricate ourselves from, and that if it does fail, not only will computer systems shut down, which has a sort of abstract fear potential to it, but also we won't be able to pour a glass of water from the tap. We won't be able to turn on our lights. We won't be able to withdraw money from the bank. So it's the sort of basic elemental Y2K fear that turned even sane, normal, modern folks into Jeremiah Johnson, you know, stockpiling bottled water in case something horrible went awry. So it's fear on a whole lot of levels, but even on the personal level, that we will no longer be able to turn on our lights in our home because that system is now computerized, has taken over our lives in a big way.
There's also the theme of surveillance, and that, you know, computers are used as tools of the state or of corporations or, you know, perhaps of their own as they become more intelligent agency. There was an interesting movie recently where the state is the big brother, enemy of the state, with Will Smith.
And Gene Hackman.
And Gene Hackman.
That's right, yeah.
That was a great movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm writing a book on computer ethics, and at the end of every chapter I have my recommended movies, and that is one of them. Uh-huh. That is a very, very good one. And another one on that line of having computers everywhere, having no privacy, being watched with anything you do, is The Net. And I really liked The Net. Sandra Bullock mm-hmm. was the prime mover of that and the star of it. And she really believed in the theme. And I didn't realize her background. But the more I learned about the movie, the more I admired her for doing that. And if people out there haven't seen the movie, I would recommend that they do. It's very entertaining. And she basically has her identity wiped from computers and doesn't exist anymore. And that's another fear. Actually, Christine and I made up a little list of fears, and I would be interested for people who are listening to maybe add to it. We thought about, you know, another funny fear that we all have today is fear of not having computers. Right now, if our computers go down for the day mm-hmm. or the internet goes down, suddenly we can't work anymore. And it's and for people who don't have computers, they're not hooked up to the internet, all the soccer team is getting its information from the internet. Why aren't you? That kind of thing, being left out. There's all kinds of fears.
Yeah.
More than we made a list. How about the fear of getting email from a friend and finding out it has a virus in it? Mm-hmm. What used to be friendly.
Yeah. And it seems so friendly. It comes with a message that says, I love you. And you open it up and your hard drive is wiped. Like, I hate you. Thank you for sending me that. Great. That's wonderful. But yeah, there's certainly the possibility, though, of identity theft or of being followed, even if you do something as simple as going to the grocery store, that what you're purchasing is being tracked in a computer and people know how often you buy Cheetos and whether you're drinking a brand name diet soda or something off the bottom of the shelf. And a lot of information that you might think is useless once combined with all the other information like your social security number and your mother's maiden name and all of that can
help. And the websites you visit.
Yes, and what you rent at the video store and everything else can be combined to create a pretty convincing profile of your life.
And actually, that is happening. Mm-hmm.
Yes, a large problem for a lot of people who have cyber stalkers.
Yeah.
Any 15-year-old girl in a chat room is prey to the weirdos lurking there, and that's a big parental fear of kids online.
Identity theft is one of the fastest-growing crimes, and it's a serious crime. And so how do we prove who we are? And that brings up another thing, which you see in lots of science fiction movies, is how losing the ability to move around freely because we get so needing to identify ourselves, that we maybe embed chips in ourselves or we mark ourselves to prove who we are. Once we do that, then we can't undo it. We've now marked ourselves. Mm-hmm. And yet, having your identity stolen is probably one of the most frightening crimes and one of the most entangling. It takes a long time to get out of. So
let me just take a moment and reintroduce you and the theme for this hour of Focus 580. We're talking about the first annual Computer Fear Film Festival, which is taking place on Saturday, September 9th, and actually Friday, the morning before as well, with some workshops and other activities. Our guests are Marcia Woodbury. She's a lecturer in the Department of Computer Science at the University of Illinois. Also Christine Catanzarite. She's Associate Director for the Illinois Program for Research in the Humanities here at the university as well. And they are the driving force behind the Computer Fear Film Festival, and, along with others, a number of other volunteers who put this together. And we're talking about computers in the movies and a number of issues that are involved in that. If you'd like to join us, you have thoughts or questions, you can call us around Champaign-Urbana at 333-9455 and toll free anywhere else, 800-222-9455. I wanted to sort of pose the notion that there are real fears, as we've been just discussing, in our use of computers and the way that they're evolving with our society. And then we have these films that imagine various scenarios, whether it's 2001 or War Games or any other of these films we've been talking about. It seems, though, that a lot of times what we imagine in our popular culture, it might be a plausible scenario and something that we probably should fear. But then what happens in reality is somewhat different, and maybe we didn't show up on our radar. For example, identity theft. I mean, we mentioned the net and so forth as an example, perhaps, of that. But there are real life issues that we deal with which are different from the issues that are dealt with in these films. And it just seems like there's this strange sort of disconnect between the ways we entertain ourselves with our fears and the real fears we face in our real lives.
Yeah, more people have problems with their printer breaking down
than
with identity theft on a fairly large scale basis. I have a broken printer right now, and all I know is that what seemed to be the boring workhorse of my computer system has now become the most critical thing in my universe, and I spend all my time going, it's in there, I want it out here. How do I do that? And I can do nothing except imagine what it would be like to be able to print a hard copy of all the things that I've toiled away to create in my computer. But it does seem that certainly when people imagine the year 2000, not all that long ago, a couple of short decades ago, we envisioned this Jetsons world with the flying cars. We thought that everybody would have a maid who would take care of your every need, and messages would be delivered instantly, and food would be prepared instantly, and you'd be able to get in your little pod and fly off to where you were going. And it is the year 2000, but there are no flying cars. We're still sort of muddling through trying to figure out how to use this technology, but we're not the futuristic society on that popular culture level that we imagined we'd be. And on the other side of it, we have now computers that, you know, a Palm Pilot has more computer power than, well, Al Gore said it, you know, well, about the rocket that took Neil Armstrong to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to sound like I'm stumping for anybody, but I'm quoting the political conventions. I need to see more movies, apparently. But it's not as glamorous on any level as we imagine it to be.
But I'd like to say that maybe because of my age, it still seems a miracle to me. I remember the first time I was on the internet and I suddenly was looking at the card catalog in a Scottish library, and I hollered out to my husband, I'm in Scotland. And today we don't think about it. We just get on a browser and boom, right, we're in China. And the miracle of it all doesn't seem to hit us. But for me, it's still absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And now I suppose I haven't done this, but I've, you know, the handhold Palm Pilot that's got the internet with you wherever you go, people will take it for granted, but it's still, to me, utterly unbelievable what we can do.
That's a really interesting point. And I was thinking about this in looking at my iMac, which is sitting on my desk at home. Mm-hmm. This little computer, which comes in one little box with a keyboard and a mouse, it's amazing. The people who invented personal computers would have just, they wouldn't have believed that something like this was possible. And sometimes I think that, as you said, we take this for granted. It's something, okay, well, here it is, you know. And we don't really quite understand how it's affecting our lives and our culture and our, you know, possibilities for communication, perhaps even community building, notions like democracy, these things that we say, you know, are important to us. These tools that we have are much more powerful than we have yet realized, perhaps.
Right. Mm-hmm. I was mindful, you know, in contrasting the reality we face, like Christine's printer not working and the dream world in movies where all these things are possible, we on our site, we have a list of all the things computers do in movies but they really don't do.
Yeah.
And some of them are really funny, and I would like to just mention in Independence Day, because that one is particularly amusing.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
In Independence Day, there's these massive, what do you call them, flying fortresses or something, sitting over the world, and we're all trying to beat them. And somehow we can interface with their computer system. Now,
right,
if you can imagine, if you have a house that has a PC and a Mac, and you're trying to interface between them, your everyday problems. And then imagine how in a movie this is just done somehow. Yeah. It's so amusing. And I guess there was a joke about it on the internet that someone uploaded Windows 95.
Right.
And that's why we beat the enemy, because they
crashed their system.
System.
Well, and of course, we all know that the entire universe is using the TCI/IP, you know, protocols in their network system, so that naturally any computer will, you know, interface with it. We have a caller to talk with. Let's include them in our conversation, and we'll welcome others. We're about at a midpoint. We're talking about the first annual Computer Fear Film Festival with Marcia Woodbury and Christine Catanzarite, two of the people who are behind this thing. And we have one caller. Would welcome others. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. 800-222-9455 anywhere else. First caller in Champaign, line one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. It strikes me that the most common and profound fear that people have of computers is that they are going to bring about sort of an inherent loss of our humanity. I think The Matrix is the best movie example that I can think of in recent years about that. So I guess I called sort of in response to Jack's, well, what are our real serious fears, mm-hmm. and how are they being manifested in the real world? But anyway, that sort of loss of humanity. So if you wanted to talk about some other movies that that address that theme, that'd be really interesting.
Great.
Well, there's certainly The Matrix is a great example
great
of
movie.
That and a fabulous movie.
Yeah.
And two sequels will now be filming back-to-back. So there
really?
Will be more Matrix. Yeah, they're going to film them together.
Interesting.
They start filming, I think, January. But they decided that clearly the franchise is up and running and people will be interested in seeing three, too. So they're filming two and three at the same time. But a film with a similar theme that was so underappreciated that it found a place on the Roger Ebert overlooked film mm-hmm. festival, Dark City.
Oh, yeah.
Which has similar themes as well.
Another great movie. Actually.
And also a really interesting film about memory theft and identity loss. The Arnold Schwarzenegger film Total Recall, where a character finds that what he believes are his real memories are mm-hmm. implanted memories that have been created for him to keep him away from finding out about some intergalactic Arnold thing that requires him to kill a lot of folks. Blade Runner deals with that issue as well. The replicants in Blade Runner have a built-in 4-year lifespan so that they can't create memories. The mortality is built into them, into their systems, so that they can't really develop any sort of humanity, and they'll drop dead before it's time for them to start to flesh that out. So this is certainly a huge fear. You know, what if you discovered that picture of yourself that you always thought was a picture of you and your mom is neither you nor your mom? That's a horrifying thought, because it happens without people being aware of it, mm-hmm. as it does within the Matrix. You know, is it better to not know that you're stuck in the Matrix and just happily exist there, or to know and not be able to find your way out?
On Bicentennial Man, the question is, what does it mean to be human? And it is a profound question. What does it mean to be human? Not only are they taking our humanity away, but what does it mean? Is he, the robot, more human than the family? Is he a warmer character with more love and compassion than the actual people that he's around? These movies are really worth a second look if you're concerned about these issues, I think.
There, and there's some really bad movies that bring these themes together, too. I was thinking of Free Jack with Mick Jagger.
Mick Jagger.
Where actually, people's bodies are stolen from the past, you know, so that people in the future, wealthy people who can afford the technology to bring them, you know, can continue to live forever if, you know, they just keep stealing bodies as they wear out. And then there was another really interesting bad movie that I actually kind of like, called Circuitry Man. Did you ever see that?
I haven't seen it, but I know of it.
Yeah. Well, this is in a post-apocalyptic society. Well, a lot of these take place when, you know, after the fall of civilization, of course, or you know, where the trends of, you know, rich and poor and the division is just you know completely taken to extremes, and so you have people who have little sockets in their heads, and instead of there being a drug trade, there's a trade in hallucinatory chips that you can insert in the socket. And so there's this underground, instead of there being an underground drug trade, there's an underground trade in these, you know, circuits.
Okay.
Anyway.
That's
interesting
similar
movie.
To Strange Days as well. The
one I didn't see that one.
With Ralph Fiennes, where people are scoring this sort of emotional high instead of drugs. It's a sort of implanted chip that gives you a feeling of great euphoria. I think, that's absolutely, the caller is definitely onto something, because all the films in the series actually have something to do with, you know, what happens? What's the dilemma of having the intelligence of a human but not any of the rights or the feelings? And one of the problems, the issue of mortality, is that what makes you human? If you, in Bicentennial Man, clearly he keeps living mm-hmm. while the family that he loves dies over the course of 200 years. So he finds himself being abandoned by the people that he loves. And while immortality sounds like a great plan in theory, in practice you don't get to have a normal existence, and you do experience enormous loss and change without being able to process the same feelings that the humans do.
We have another caller to talk with, and I promise we'll get right to them, but just to follow up on what you were mm-hmm. talking about, it seems, isn't there also a tension between the notion of computers as logical devices and that we're building something, a structure that's larger than us that is essentially locked into a logical existence, mm-hmm. and our own feeling of humanity and creativity and warmth and emotion and empathy, so that there is this tension between these two modes of existence. There's a sort of underlying current of fear that, for example, the Borg represent in Star Trek, that we, mm-hmm. as we integrate these things in our lives and maybe integrate them into our anatomies, if we're talking about robotics and prosthetics and so forth, that we become more like this logical, emotionless thing mm-hmm. that we've created.
I could say a flippant thing, and of course I have to say it now that I've thought of it, but it's like the problems with the north end of campus and the south end of campus here. They have a vision on campus of the separation between science and the humanities that is sad, that we have to associate all the logic and the yes, no, right, wrong with the north end of campus and all the feeling with the south end of campus.
Very interesting.
Yeah, well, indeed.
We have a couple callers to talk with. Let's include them in our conversation. We'll go next to line number four. Caller on us. Oh, I'm sorry. I made them wait too long. They were on a cell phone, and maybe they had to had to hang up. Well, okay, we'll go next to line number one, listener in Freeport. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning. Well, I've just tuned in. Perhaps you've already discussed this, but what's your view of robots or and or computers eventually challenging mankind, their creators, and literally taking over the world?
I like that question a lot because Bill Joy just wrote an article in April in Wired about that topic, about it's almost too late. We've created computers so well, and they're being miniaturized. They can self-replicate, and now they will be in charge. We've actually made ourselves an endangered species, was what he said. So I do think that there's actually a lot of room for this topic. We hope in our panels that we have on Friday morning to talk a little bit about that. And I've just actually been thinking about it much more seriously, especially in terms of the themes of our movies, which is artificial life and if we have given ourselves over mm-hmm. to computers. Mm-hmm. This is just I don't know if I'm holding up a collar, though.
No.
I came home and I was asking my children, are robots good or bad? And they said, oh, they're usually evil. They're usually computers are evil. And then we mm-hmm. started thinking about Star Wars and R2-D2 and C-3PO and so forth. And they don't necessarily have to be.
Right, but evil. Again, yeah. R2-D2 and C-3PO are human computers. They have mm-hmm. not just logic, but empathy and fear and emotional reactions to their, you know, circumstances.
And timidity, now that I think of C-3PO. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Personality.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a very interesting point. I found myself thinking about some of the, not necessarily in the films, but in some of the literature of some very cutting-edge people who, I mean, one hopes that maybe their work will be made into movies. I'm thinking of William Gibson and Neal Stephenson. Mm-hmm. And Stephenson wrote a book called The Diamond Age, where nanotechnology and robotics plays a huge role. Nanotechnology being the basis for essentially the entire technology of the culture, which is a miniature form of robotics, I suppose. And, you know, you were describing that maybe it's already too late. This is something that perhaps is on the horizon in another 10 or 15 years as a technology that potentially could transform a great deal of our society.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we wouldn't have to worry about feeding people, but we'd have to oil them.
Well, we have another call to talk with. Let's include them. This is a listener in Urbana, line number two. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to tell you about a radio play I heard on the BBC that maybe you could include next year. It was really it was about that artificial intelligence had gotten to the point where there were people believed there were beings that that existed on the internet, and it really upset the church because somebody had to decide whether these beings had a soul or not, and whether or not they could be saved, etc. And it's only an hour, and it was really very interesting how one of the main parts was that this priest that was sent to see if it had a soul was debating with himself whether or not he should kill this being, but it came to the point where he realized that, or the being was telling, it was a female being, by the way, was telling him that it was really beyond his capability to kill her because she just disappears off in the internet and is resides somewhere else.
That sounds very interesting.
Yeah,
that sounds
really
great. I'd like to hear that.
It's a radio play?
Yeah, a radio play with the BBC, and I forget the series that it's part of, but I'm sure if you contacted them, they could give you a tape or something. But and last year, the Indiana University had a symposium on intelligent machines, and they were wondering if it was the end of humanity, very much like you were talking about. And I think it's it kind of ties in with all this. And I just wanted to add that to the discussion. And also, one last thing, and then I'll hang up, and that's that Metropolis thing is really, I really love that film. One line in it is really great, and it kind of pertains to what you were talking about, too, and that is that that one line is that the brain will never understand the hand without the mediation of the heart.
Right.
Yeah, it seems to be so much of our fear of computers has to do with that lack of heart, and we don't seem to have the faith that we can program it in. But anyway, nice. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the thoughts. Appreciate that. Yeah, I think that line is at the end of the movie. It really wraps up the whole thing and really kind of encapsulates this fear we have of technology and what it's doing to us. And it's such such a key thing in all the things that we've been talking about.
Yeah, it really is encouraging to know that at the end of it, without the heart, it all is fairly meaningless. So
you ought to tell them again when that's going to be shown and where, because a lot of people.
Metropolis will be on October 18th at which is a Wednesday at 4:00 in the afternoon, in the auditorium, room 62 of the Krannert Art Museum. It's free, open to the public, and more information about that can be found at www.iprh.uiuc.edu. So more information about the film and the other films in the series as well.
Great. And that's the On the Town series, the city in film that you're presenting, the Illinois Program for Research in the Humanities. And the other film festival we're talking about, just to reiterate, it's on Saturday, September 9th, and that's the Computer Fear Film Festival starting at,
7:00.
7:00 at Folinger Auditorium. On the campus of the university. We have about 10 minutes left with our guests, Marcia Woodbury and Christine Catanzarite, two of the people behind the Computer Fear Film Festival. And we have open lines if you'd like to call us, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, 800-222-9455.
That gives me an opportunity, if we don't have a caller right now, to talk about... back to the Insect Fear Festival, one of the things Mae Barenboim likes to do is point out bloopers and also talk about just how bad these movies are. But our movies are pretty good. And the only one notable thing we could find is the Golden Raspberry Awards. And perhaps Christine knows more about these than I do. But every year they are awarded in Hollywood for the worst acting, the worst movie, and so forth. I did bring a list of them along. But
maybe anti-Oscars. They actually are awarded the day before the Academy Awards.
I have a feeling Battlefield Earth is up for this,
oh,
this year.
I think it's going to sweep. I think it's going all the way. My feeling. There's not even a runner-up in sight where I'm standing.
I thought this summer produced some, well, there's, you know, some competition. I haven't gone to the movies all summer, so I, you know. But the Golden Raspberry did nominate Robin Williams for his acting in Bicentennial Man. Uh-huh. So that we do have some claim to fame for horribleness.
That's good. For those people who think that there should be an actual federal law that prohibits Robin Williams from smiling through tears in a film, and I'm one of them. I'm leading the write-in campaign to have that added to our Constitution.
Good. But actually, Blade Runner got nominated for some Oscars. It was Best Art Decoration and Set Decoration, Best Visual Effects. Mm-hmm. And I think The Terminator had almost zero nominations for anything. I was looking for something.
Yeah.
And The Bicentennial Man was nominated for Best Makeup, but just nominated for Oscar for...
There's another film that I really love that we haven't mentioned. It doesn't really have a lot of computers in it, but there is at least as a background element, and that's Brazil.
Oh,
yeah. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
The computers essentially are manual typewriters with wires connected to them.
Yeah.
And technology is just completely a mess in this whole entire world that is described in this film. And actually, there's a bug that gets, do you remember that there's a mistaken identity because a fly drops into this typewriter as the guy is typing in this arrest order.
Yeah.
And of course it changes one of the characters of the guy's name, and of course they get the wrong guy.
Yeah, he goes from being Buttle to Tuttle, and all of a sudden people are crashing through his window trying to destroy his life because of this computer glitch.
Right.
A fly, an actual bug in the system.
Yeah.
That is so
that's
real.
That's wonderful.
That's an everyday thing. When the bureaucracy gets your name wrong and you're suddenly your phone service stops and you think what happened,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, gotcha.
When computers do get us wrong, it's an endless nightmare. And or you get misbilled and you try to correct it
and the people who you call on the phone can't correct it because they don't have access to the files in the computer system.
Yeah. You're assuming you actually get a person on the phone. Have you talked to a human being on the phone in the past several years? I just keep pressing buttons. I never get a human. It's like, I will give you $100 if a human being will pick up this phone and help me. Because I keep getting the computer menu telling me all the ways that I can't possibly be helped by this organization. So, on that level, my fear of computers knows no bounds. I don't want to make a single call to anybody on any level. I think, when you were talking about whether they were good films or bad films, well, Terminator is interesting because it spawned, you know, Son of Terminator, which has one of my favorite statistics in film. And Terminator cost $7 million, the original one, written by James Cameron, who went on to become the king of the geeks and got a lot of heat for calling himself the king of the world. And rightly so. But he's interesting in the film community in that he has no degree in film. He has a degree in engineering from Caltech. So he thought of the world in technological terms and thinks of films in terms of what can be done with the technology, not what can be done with the art of film. But when the sequel was made, after Arnold had become a much bigger star and everybody went on to think that this was going to make another $200 million, the sequel cost way more than $7 million. In fact, Arnold's salary for the second one was $14 million. And when it comes right down to it, by far, The Terminator, the original, is a much better film. In the second one, he also develops emotion. He's no longer the top-of-the-line model, and now he's the Terminator working on the side of right. And,
yeah,
and he has that moment where he cries. So the big cyborg character actually weeps. He does everything but say, "Oh, Dorothy, now I know I have a heart because it's breaking," and gets a little weepy. So the Terminator 2 is the one that should belong in the cheesy film festival. The first Terminator is terrifying and wonderful in every way.
Terminator 2, he's he's the politically correct Terminator. He no longer kills people, he just breaks their kneecaps.
Yeah, he shoots everybody in the kneecap, and we seem to think that he's a great humanitarian as a result. You see the entire L.A. police force writhing in agony on the ground. We're thinking, oh, what a nice man that Arnold is.
We have a couple callers in just about 4 minutes, so let's try to include at least one more.
Okay.
Listener in Chicago next, line number 4. Good morning, you're on Focus 580.
Well, thank you. Speaking of robots, today's Chicago Tribune reports application of robotics to the point where the robots actually design and build themselves. This was actually reported today from Brandeis University in Chicago's Tribune today. And also here in town, there's an exhibit on over 1,000 items exhibited on how things work, applied engineering, getting to the point where we can really begin to visualize and maybe film a lot of the things that we have only imagined on film, like the things you've been talking about. So we've got a lot to look forward to, but I wonder how humanity is going to deal with the robotization, assembly, computer industry that displaces humanity from much of the work we do, and what will we humans have to do once that really happens, and we don't have to worry about unions and pensions and all the other things, and just begin to enjoy the harvest of life's luxury. I thought I'd just throw that in. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept, and that's actually one of the things that runs through a lot of Isaac Asimov's work when he's talking about robots, and he did write the story upon which Bicentennial Man is based, but one of the things that he thought was great about robots was that they would perform the repetitive, mind-numbing work, leaving all of us free to enjoy a creative and fulfilling life. It hasn't worked out quite the way. It hasn't played itself out in the way that he imagined. But that the robot was originally envisioned in a lot of his stories as the savior of our creativity and the very thing that would allow us to live fulfilling lives.
We just have a couple minutes left, and I'm sorry to say there's a caller we won't be able to include in this hour. But just as a way of wrapping up, I guess I'm wondering what you think. Do we learn something by looking at these films, and if so, is there a particular way we should try to think about?
Well, actually, the question might be, are these films teaching us something that's true or not true? Mm-hmm. In other words, mm-hmm. You might get images in your mind and heart from watching the films that are not true.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, that computers work all the time.
right. Yeah.
And that they do a lot better than they really do. That we're not as far along as we are.
I certainly think that this year's lineup of films in the festival bring up issues that we've been wrestling with on a lot of levels. Like, what does it mean to be alive? What's the nature of humanity? Cloning technology has brought that to the forefront. What is an artificial human? At what point do you become artificial? What point do you become real? Certainly all the trend analysts say that this year's big Christmas toy will be this Poochie. Have you seen this? It's a little robot dog. But, do you get a pet because you want something that barks and wags its tail, or would you really want the mammal that actually reacts to you? So I think that they bring up a lot of issues that we've been exploring on a lot of other levels, not just with computer technology, but with other advanced technological forms where we talk about the ethical implications of creating artificial intelligence and what do we then owe it, what does it owe us, and to what extent do we want it to be like us? So I think that these films, even if they're, Razzie winners, they certainly touch on some fears and some concerns and some anxieties that we have because of things that are in the newspaper and not on the screen necessarily.
Well, we'll have to stop there. As usual, there are many things we could talk about, but we can suggest for folks to, if you'd like to, look at the films that are going to be as part of this on September 9th at 7 p.m., you said, at Folinger mm-hmm. Auditorium, the first film mm-hmm. by Centennial Man. And that's the Computer Film Festival. And once again, the website, www.acm.uiuc.edu/CF3. And to both of you, Marsha Woodbury and Christine Katanzarite, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you.